Time to get our local view. Usually the Crunch Time leadoff man. Now he hits first for sports talk. Find his work, actually today, on the cover of the Register Guard sports section. Catch up with what you missed. RegisterGuard.com on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are you on this fine Tuesday?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing good. How are you?
All right. So clearly they're not checking with us as far as when they should practice. But what did Coach Taggart and the guys say about this? I guess they pulled the plug on the idea of playing at altitude here and decided to stay in Eugene?
Yeah, Willie was very cryptic about why they made the decision at the last minute not to practice in Gilchrist today. He basically just said he woke up today and changed his mind. So
okay.
I have a feeling there was probably a little more to it than that, but he didn't really want to say. I do get the sense that Willie's kind of a spontaneous guy. You know, throughout preseason camp, things would sort of change on the fly. They'd be having a scrimmage tomorrow, and then you get there, and they moved it, and now it's actually today. So there have been a few things like that. I get the sense that Willie sort of goes with his gut and how he's feeling when he wakes up in the morning.
I can't live like that. I don't know how you guys know it. I need to have everything compartmentalized or I'll lose my mind and end up in therapy. Anyway, as a baseball fan who obviously works in a big-time college football town, I know you also follow the NFL. So when we hit this time of year when the pennant races spill into the start of football season, is this pretty high on your best sports time of year list?
Oh, yeah, this is my favorite time of year. You know, it's the weather, it's football season, it's October baseball just around the corner. I love this time of year. Now, I loved it a little bit more a couple years ago when the Royals were winning the division and on their way to the World Series, but even now, I still love it, even though they're about a 500 team right now.
Yeah, but they're kind of in it because everybody else is mediocre. I've been calling this the season of extremes. You got Cleveland on this win streak. There was a time when they and Arizona had both won at least 13 games in a row. The Dodgers went from winning 120 games to never winning again. You see prohibitive favorites in like the NBA with Golden State, maybe Alabama in college football. Does this kind of a season kind of maybe add to the mystery and present us with what should be a great wide open race for the World Series?
Well, it's a reminder that it's a long season and things that look like a total certainty at one point in the season often end up not coming to pass. Even just a month ago, the Dodgers looked like maybe one of the best teams ever assembled. I mean, they were just a machine for so much of this season. The Indians, I picked the Indians to go to the World Series. There was a time, for a lot of this season that they were just kind of okay, hanging around, and then they just have completely turned it on over the last 3 weeks or so. And the Dodgers obviously have just completely fallen apart. So, people who've been around the game a long time, and it applies whether it's baseball or football or any sport, will tell you, don't get sucked into what's happening in the moment because things change in such crazy ways you never would expect. And that's part of what makes it fun. You know, it's unpredictable.
No, I love it. And also within the last 13 years, you've had the Red Sox end an 86-year drought, the White Sox 88, the Cubs 108, Cleveland at 69. We could see stuff that nobody got to see. We continue with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. I know as a Royals fan, you kind of get to do the old Godfather, keep your friends close but your enemies closer. So are you willing to press the bet on Cleveland? Or do you buy into that theory that when teams go on crazy streaks, they're asking for it all to come unglued?
Well, I guess the Dodgers would be a little bit of evidence on that theory. But in general, no, I would much rather put my money on the team that won 20 in a row as opposed to a team that's been hanging around 500 all season. I like the Indians. I've liked them from day one. I just think their rotation is really good. Corey Kluber's pitching at a Cy Young level right now. I think their lineup, top to bottom, is really strong. Their bullpen's good. I just don't think there's a lot of weaknesses with Cleveland. Obviously, I guess, because what is it? Is it 20 in a row now?
19 going for 20 tonight 19. With Kluber.
Yeah. Well, you don't win 19 games in a row unless you've got a whole lot going for you. So I would gladly double down on my Indians pick to win the World Series.
And not a bad manager who's been through this before.
That too.
Let's get to Oregon State football. You've been up. You've covered the team a bit, talked with the coaches, players. They looked terrible against Colorado State, barely beat Portland State, and then rallied in the second quarter against Minnesota, and then it was over, and now they headed for Pullman. You list an array of issues in today's article, but how bad is this looking on the brink of the Pac-12 season?
It's pretty bleak right now in Corvallis, I got to say, partly because of their schedule. You know, you look at their next five games, they play Washington State, Washington, USC, Stanford, Colorado. Oregon State could easily be 1-7, and then they play three of their last four on the road. So, man, they're going to have to really turn things around in a hurry to avoid a really historically bad season there. It's surprising because I really thought this was going to be the year they took a step forward with Gary Anderson. It was the third year. There was some buzz about Jake Luton finally being the quarterback that they needed. I really thought Oregon State was going to go to a bowl game. It's not looking that way now. They've really got to get things turned around.
Yeah, you mentioned it today. It's not far-fetched with Washington State, the Huskies at USC, then Colorado. They could be 1-7 hitting the bye with a crazy finishing schedule. Any word if they're planning big changes, new quarterback? Is it too early to hit the panic button? Or if they're just thinking that it'll turn around and I guess kind of the trust the process philosophy?
You know, I asked Gary Anderson if he was tempted to make any big sweeping changes after that Minnesota game, and he basically said, we're not going to push the panic button. We have a plan. We know that our plan works. We're going to stick to it. I think part of that is, what can they do? You know, what can you change at this point in the season? I mean, you prepare for a whole season, and then it goes bad after three games. What do you do? You can't just, you know, scrap everything you spent a whole offseason preparing for. So I think they're going to have to ride it out. I certainly would expect, you know, if things don't turn around, there would be some staff changes there. I think probably the assistants are all on the clock to show that they have some answers here. Quarterback-wise, you know, they've played Darrell Garrettson a little bit. I would expect they'd continue to play both quarterbacks here and there, but it's symptomatic of, I think, what's been one of the biggest problems there since Gary Anderson arrived. They just haven't had a quarterback. You know, they've cycled through so many guys there, and every one that seems to win the job gets the label of, well, this guy is the answer. We found an answer at quarterback, but so far none of them have been. Maybe Jake Luton will turn into that with a little more time, but right now their quarterback position feels as unsettled as it ever has.
No question about it. Anybody who watched the second half last week, yuck. Let's move to Duck football with Austin Meeker, the Register guard. Your post-game piece, kind of Charles Dickens, A Tale of Two Halves. The level of production of the first half off the charts, then the third and fourth quarters. Breakdowns, turnovers, maybe some conservative play calling. Was it a different team protecting a lead? Or is there any logic to, with so much new, be it players, coaches, system, could you just chalk it up to they're still finding their way and this is also a work in progress?
Tale of two halves. That's a good one. I'll have to use that one.
You got it. For a small fee.
Well, I think it's everything that you said. I think this is what Oregon's gonna be this season. You know, I think people should probably get used to this. I think they're going to look really good at times. I think they're going to look not so good at times because they're too talented not to be good at times. You know, when the offense is clicking, they have the talent to put some points on people like they did in that first half. And they just completely destroyed Nebraska's defense in that first half. But they're also so new, and there's so many moving parts, and there's so much in transition. They're also going to have times like that second half where they just couldn't get anything done. Offensively, they couldn't move the ball. They had mistakes, turnovers, dropped passes, things like that. It's going to happen with a team that is very much in the middle of a transition. But maybe it won't be as extreme as it was, though. I mean, the disparity between good and bad in that game was very striking. I would expect that to even out a little bit as the season goes on, but I do think they're going to have some ups and downs.
Yeah, you and I talked late last season and this preseason. We're both pretty big on Justin Herbert. I thought that touchdown throw to Nelson in the corner is an NFL pass. He hit some guys on crossing patterns in stride. He's shown an arm that can throw at 60, 65 yards downfield. Is it important to remember, as great as he's been, and maybe, you know, bad decision throwing into triple coverage, that we're in essence a whole nine starts into his college career, and what he might be is even more astounding than the brilliant flashes we've seen?
Yeah, he's playing at a high, high level, and it certainly makes you wonder, you know, what's the potential for this guy? I think the sky's the limit. He's only going to get better. And I think it'll be interesting to see how this offense develops, because in the second half, obviously, Oregon wanted to run the ball. They wanted to win that way. They wanted to put the game away on the ground. They didn't want to put too much on Justin Herbert. But they were having trouble running the ball, you know, and I think a lot of people felt like they went a little bit too conservative. I'm not necessarily going to say that. I think it's smart football when you have a big lead like that to try to keep the ball on the ground. But when you've got Justin Herbert, you know, you also got to be confident to put the ball in his hands and, you know, let him make a play. And he had the one interception, obviously a throw he'd like to have back.
Yep.
But if it's me, I'm never going to hesitate to put the ball in that guy's hand and say, hey, go make a throw to get a big first down.
Yeah, let's see what happens if this situation surfaces in conference. Lastly, a year ago, they really didn't put UC Davis away. They played Nebraska on the road, gave up 250 yards rushing alone, and really were gassed when they needed a final defensive stand. So if correcting last year's defense is a process that's no overnight fix, you consider the shutout in the second half of Game 1 and the multiple stops to win this game. How encouraging should, you know, supporters of this program be with the way the defense has played the last two games, knowing it's just two games?
I think they're ahead of schedule from where I thought they'd be defensively. I mean, Nebraska finished with, what, 360-some yards?
Yep.
I'd have to go back and look the last time Oregon held a quality opponent under 400 yards. It's probably been a while. That defense, I think one of the big things you take away from that game is, even though the offense couldn't put it away in the second half, defense came up with some big plays. They weren't perfect, but they made the stops when they needed to make the stops. And that's a new thing for Oregon. You know, it's at no point since I've covered the team, really, did you feel real good about Oregon's defense being on the field with the other team driving for a chance to tie the game. Still not a situation you want to be in. Oregon doesn't want to put its defense in that situation all the time, but it's nice to know that if it ends up that way, that they can come through.
That's a good one, by the way. Now I'm on a mission to find out the last time Oregon held a quality opponent under 400 yards.
Yeah. Did it happen in 14? That was my first thought. There probably was a game in 2014 that they did it, but I don't know. It might go all the way back to Chip.
Wow. All right. Definitely, I'm now on a mission, and thank you for the homework assignment.
You report back to me.
I will. You can catch what Austin's up to in the Register Guard, registerguard.com, on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Travel safe to Laramie. Always appreciate your time, and we'll catch up next week.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Take it easy.